Hello and welcome to the fourth episode of Bull vs. Bear, a show in which we test the buy and sell cases for blue chip stocks. This week we are looking at Rio Tinto, one of the largest companies in the FTSE 100 and one of the better performers in the index in 2016-2017. I'm Alex Newman, Deputy Companies Editor at the Investors Chronicle, and putting the bear case to me today is Richard Knights, Mining Equity Research Analyst at Liberum, who I'm very happy to have here in the studio. So Richard, thanks very much for coming in today.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the bear case and why you think, as per your recent note, that Rio shares are currently inflated around 20% above their fair value and that investors should probably sell out.
Well, I mean, I think it's all about point in cycle, as it is with all mining equities. And what we've seen the last couple of years is the sector obviously rallying significantly. I think Rio's share price is probably 130% or so above where it bottomed out at the beginning of 2016. And that's been mainly driven by very rapid expansion in Chinese credit. And around March last year, we started to see Chinese credit rolling off. And now if we look at Chinese credit, the way we like to look at it is credit versus GDP. And if we look at 12-month rolling credit growth versus GDP growth, it's actually below, credit growth is below GDP growth, which means it's contractionary. And typically in that environment, mining shares will underperform. Usually it's about 9 to 12-month lead. So we're sort of right in that zone where we would start to see that credit have an impact on the Chinese economy. And, you know, where are we seeing it most significantly? We're seeing it in the property sector, where housing sales, housing new starts have started to decline and are now just about printing negative year on year. Not quite yet. They're still in positive territory, but the trend looks quite clear. So that makes us cautious for demand for Rio Tinto's core product, which is iron ore, at the same time as we sort of see supply growing as well.
So I suppose if I was Rio Tinto's one of their executives, I would say, or would point to, and as they do in their presentations, that two of their answers to that is that, one, they're selling a what they say is a premium product, and that their cash profit margins have managed to hold up relatively over the last 2 years, even though the premiums to spot price iron ores have sort of danced around. And secondly, that, you know, the mine they've built in Western Australia has some flexibility built into it, so that they are always after value. Obviously, they can't control the iron ore market because there's so many, you know, there's several other big players. Does that not take some of the pressure out of,
Yeah, so, I mean, I can handle those points one at a time. On the premium point, it is true that we've seen the price for benchmark grade iron ore, which is mainly what Rio Tinto produce, expand over low grade iron ore. So, you know, benchmark grade iron ore is probably selling for about $63-$64 a ton at the moment. Low grade's closer to $40 a ton. And that's a pretty high premium compared to what we've seen historically. That's partially a function of restrictions that we've seen in China on pollution, and that has incentivized steel mills to want to use higher grade iron ore because you produce more steel for a given unit of inputs or pollutants. However, the premium we're seeing at the moment is actually not inconsistent with the level of steel mill profitability that we've seen historically. And what I mean by that is that premium usually tracks steel mill profitability, i.e. when steel mills are making lots of money, they're incentivized to want to produce more steel, so they try and use as much higher grade material as they can. And if we did a little chart and plotted spot Chinese steel mill profitability against that iron ore premium, you'd see it's exactly where we expect it to be given the high level of Chinese steel profitability. Now, my argument is that steel profitability in China is going to fall because of demand, and as a result, you will see the benchmark grade iron ore move back down towards the lower grade.
Interesting. I suppose, this might be a slightly left field factor to bring in, but when we look at some of the pelletized iron ore, I know that's not a market that Rio's involved in, and there are some longer term contracts there. For Expos, I was looking at their results last week in this Ukrainian miner. They produce pelletized iron ore. They're saying that they can see some quite good visibility of these premiums holding up. Does the blended premium product that Rio sells not sit somewhere in between there? And
not really. I mean, Forexpo sells with reference to a benchmark price, right, which I think from memory is sort of settled every, it's either 6 to 12 months, I can't remember which, but because of that, they have more visibility. So that premium is static. They agree that at the beginning of the year, and that's static against a floating fines price. Rio Tinto's pricing arrangements are much shorter term than that. And again, I can't remember the mix, but it's a high percentage of them are on spot or priced within the last month. And then there's a smaller percentage on a 3 month rolling basis. So they don't get to fix those premiums. Those premiums will come down, in my opinion, if Chinese steel mill profitability comes down, which I expect.
Okay. It's probably worth staying on iron ore just for a moment, because as you say, I mean, it makes up so much of Rio's cash generation. Fair enough. I mean, that was quite a technical discussion we had on the actual product.
Probably put your listeners to sleep. Sorry.
Fair enough. But I suppose also what counts is, and why people buy shares in Rio Tinto, is that, you know, these are still pretty high quality assets, and the costs are very, very low. So with looking at sort of $13 a ton, if you're taking a longer view, say beyond 12 months, wouldn't you potentially argue that, okay, right, there may be some pressure on pricing, and that's going to affect profitability, but longer term, I mean, this is the sort of asset that survives the dips and rises.
No question about that. If you want to own iron ore assets, Rio probably has the best assets in the industry. I suppose my concern with that is you don't know how long these cycles last for. And if we are indeed on a down cycle now, and we don't have Chinese credit start to accelerate again, then you could see prices for iron ore move into the cost structure, i.e. sort of down from the current $62 a ton level to $40 for an extended period of time. And in that environment, you know, you could see the shares fall, probably even more than the sort of 20% I'm targeting. I suppose at that point, the equation becomes different, because I'd argue that the risk reward is probably more to the upside there. But the shares are very volatile, and mining shares are very volatile, and so it's not that easy for most investors to buy a share and be sitting on a 25% loss within a year and then have to fight to recoup that back. So I would argue you're always best to try and take a view on the point in cycle, or maybe not your best advice to take a view, because it's very difficult to do, but you should always be cognizant of the point in cycle.
This may be a point of agreement almost that longer term, I mean, another China's probably not going to come along anytime soon.
No.
But when iron ore prices did drop very, very heavily in 2015, they did then, I mean, there was, I know you said this is a function of Chinese credit.
Yep.
They did rebound quite quickly, didn't they? So, I mean, longer term view, I mean, surely we should look at a company like Rio in, you know, and smooth the troughs.
Yeah,
and
so I would say there's another factor that you have to consider, and that is China's steel consumption relative to its level of GDP, and it's incredibly high. If you look at it versus other developing nations of similar at similar levels of GDP per capita, it's multiples in terms of the level of steel it's consuming per unit of GDP per capita, and it's actually even sort of middle to high amongst advanced economies. And so we would expect Chinese steel consumption per capita and in aggregate to start to decline. And that's before you even consider the impact of recycling. So typically what happens as an economy matures is the scrap cycle kicks in, more redundant steel becomes available for recycling. And when you recycle redundant steel, it's smelted in an electric arc furnace, which doesn't use iron ore, or if it does, it uses very little high-grade pellet iron ore. So that would result in a decline in iron ore demand from China on two fronts. And bear in mind, China's consuming or importing 79% of the world's seaborne iron ore, something like that at the moment. If Chinese iron ore consumption is being hit by a reduction in intensity of consumption as GDP grows, and also recycling, you know, I think there's scope from consumption to fall from current sort of 800 million ton levels to maybe 600 million tons. And I wouldn't expect Rio shares to go up in that period of time.
Just to turn away from iron ore, if it's possible, one area where it seems to me that Rio is planning for the future is coal, or the lack thereof. So, I mean, as of today, they've pretty much divested their entire coal portfolio,
yeah.
Which jars slightly when you look at the, you know, Glencore, and they're talking about their sort of late stage cycle commodity focus. That sort of jars when you see them very hungry for Rio coal assets. And the other thing which you would expect in the coming years is for a discount to be applied to miners with any exposure to high carbon intensive fossil fuels like coal. Is that not a possibility that Rio's prepared itself for that sort of future where, you know, large institutional investors are just going to ignore the likes of BHP, Anglo and Glencore for the fact that they do have coal operations?
I think there's definitely a suite of investor who is allergic to investing in coal and for whatever reasons has decided that it's not where they want to put their money, and that's fine. And Rio obviously now appeals to that suite of investors more than say a Glencore. But, you know, I don't think there's, you know, in my opinion, if you ask me now my stance on coal versus 12 months ago, I'd say I'm probably marginally more positive long term. China has set a range that it hopes that the coal price will be in, which is comfortably below where current coal prices are. So, you know, I still think that the next move is down. But actually, you know, 2 years ago, we were thinking of long run coal prices, you know, in the $45 to $50 a ton range. I think it's probably now more like $60 to $65, which is well below the current $90, $95. But, you know, I'm probably slightly more optimistic on coal prices. But having said that, you know, I think the next move's down. And as far as Rio's decision to divest those assets, on a quick sort of look at the numbers, they seem to have got very good prices in my opinion for the assets. So I can't complain. You know, if you take my commodity view, sure, with the prices that they've achieved for those sales,
it also means they're probably just about slipping into a net cash position, and they have got a pretty strong balance sheet as well. So that's, I suppose, the other part to this is that, you know, if there is a tricky couple of years for iron ore prices, they've got the balance sheet this time, and they've not been as expansive as they were in 2012, and they're, you know, blowing $17 billion on CapEx a year.
Yeah.
They're looking a lot more defensive as a stock now.
Yeah, certainly from a balance sheet perspective, they're very defensive. And look, my argument isn't that if we have a rollover in the sector that Rio Tinto underperforms. I mean, I think because of their balance sheet, I think because of the low-cost nature of their iron ore and their aluminium assets, you know, they're very well cushioned, and you know, this company will deliver an annuity stream of cash flows. But it's just where those cash flows bottom out in terms of timing an investment decision. And, you know, with mining companies, I think the sagest piece of advice is always be looking to buy them when they look expensive and be looking to sell them when they look cheap. And if you look, and that's typical of all cyclical companies, because when you're usually at the top of the cycle, the cash flows are very strong. You know, Rio's got a 10% free cash flow yield. It's returning money to shareholders, which are all very good things. But, you know, if we've learned anything about mining over the last 4 or 5 years is that, you know, those free cash flow yields can go from 10% to 4 or 5% very, very quickly. So in my opinion, it's not the time to be buying them.
Right. That's a good point to conclude on, I suppose. But my final question, Richard, would be, I mean, Rio is obviously, as you alluded to, there's stepped up its share buyback program. Does that suggest timidity? Do you think that they're, you know, they don't see projects out there to invest in? Does that say, you know, is that an inverse way of saying this is the top of the cycle? You know, capital, they're not going to be deploying in a big way.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's also a function of the fact that last cycle in 2011-2012, every company in the sector made acquisitions and spent capital on brownfield growth that it probably regrets. And, you know, this time around, that isn't happening. And that will mean that the cycle this time is not as violent as it was last time. So, you know, you're probably not going to see the highs and the lows that you saw 2011 to 2015. It'll be much more timid than that. So yeah, I think there is definitely a reluctance from management teams to make any big acquisitions, and there's also a lack of big assets out there. I mean, a lot of the mid-tier mining companies have been bought during the last cycle, and there aren't that many sort of tier one assets sitting out there in companies that can be easily acquired without changing your political risk profile significantly, which is what companies like Rio would be probably loath to do.
Right. Good stuff. Well, Richard, really good to speak to you. And for more podcasts, do visit the Investors Chronicle website or go to Acast or iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, folks, it's Mark Maron from WTF. I've been talking to all kinds of famous people in my garage since 2009, including a sitting president.
You know, I don't imagine you were flying in here on the chopper thinking like, you know, I am nervous about Mark.
No, I wasn't.
Okay, well, that's good.
That would be a problem.
It would be a problem.
If the president was feeling stressed about
coming to my garage.
Coming to your garage.
And now there's even more WTF when you subscribe to the full Marin to get weekly bonus content and all WTF episodes ad-free. Listen to WTF wherever you get podcasts and subscribe to the full Marin at go.acast.com/WTF.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.